Welcome back, everybody, to the China Startup Pulse, your looking glass into the Chinese and Asian startup ecosystem. I'm Oscar Ramos, and I'm thrilled to be the host for today's episode with Bruno Bensai. Bruno is the co-founder of AngelBest, a Chinese-European M&A boutique that assists buyers and sellers in any type of transaction to acquire companies. Bruno is going to share a lot of insights extremely relevant for entrepreneurs. He's going to talk about the options for an exit, the options that happen at the end of the life of your company when it comes a different type of organization. It's going to demystify how the IPO is not the only option. And by the end of the episode, we're going to talk a lot about early exits, when you sell your company quite early in the process of building it, and how sometimes this might be a better alternative than wait long time, go through different funding rounds, and after 5-7 years, sell your company. So without any further ado, welcome, Bruno. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. Today, our guest is Bruno Bensai.
Correct.
And Bruno has been a mentor in China Accelerator since the very beginning. He has actually been involved in China Accelerator even before any of the actual team of China Accelerator was involved in the program. And he's also been a long-term player in the startup ecosystem in China. He comes from France. He had a background in hardcore engineering, aerospace engineering. But today, Bruno runs ShanghaiVest, an M&A consultancy firm that advises companies in Europe and China in M&A transactions, in acquisitions and mergers. Bruno, for a person that comes from an engineering background, how was this transition to the business side in China?
So first of all, let me tell you, I'm very happy to be here today and share with you my experience. I was a businessman disguised as an engineer. So engineering is because I could solve math equations and I love physics. But at the end of the day, I've always loved better the business side, which is why I have relentlessly tried to move to the business side and doing an MBA and going overseas to learn more things about general management and running companies rather than staying into deep engineering. And it has its drawbacks because as you move away from technology a little bit, you learn new things in finance, but you're less aware of what's going on into deep tech. But yet my engineering background is always very useful, especially when talking about AI and semiconductors, software, and so on. So being an engineer has always been very helpful, but I have never been a long-term engineer as a job.
Yeah, you actually played a lot of roles. I mean, you've been manager for startups in China. You have played also on the VC side. And you've been a quite active angel in the community.
That's right. China has given me the opportunity to do a lot of different things, and which is why I keep coming back. I do live in France now, where I moved my family back a few years ago. But I'm in China every month, and it's very refreshing because it enables you to do a lot of different things with the tech ecosystem, doing angel investments, as well as advising startups into looking for strategic partners, looking for investors. And before that, as you were mentioning, I was running the China teams of European and Japanese startups that were VC-backed. And that helped me get into the VC industry. And I worked for the VC industry for a few years. And after that, I set up my own consultancy with a lawyer in 2010.
So you are now in the for a lot of people is one of the last stages of entrepreneurship. When we think about entrepreneurship, everybody thinks, okay, I'm going to start the company. But some people say that when you take VC money, when you take outside investment, every startup has a secondary business model, which is that eventually they need an exit. They need to sell themselves or they need to go public. And that's actually something that happens a lot in China. People believe that the exit, the ultimate goal is going public, is to get listed. But M&As are actually in most parts of the world, the number one option for startups. When you talk with companies, what are your thoughts about? What feedback do you get on that?
When I talk to companies in general, what strikes me is the lack of awareness of what it means to do an exit. Also, the lack of awareness of what it means to have an investor into your capitalization table. When you start a company, it's you and maybe one or two other people, and you're accountable to almost no one. And when somebody comes in, you're now accountable to a lot of different people, and that creates complexity. So as Guy Kawasaki, the renowned author, was saying, taking VC money can be like a drug. So if you can avoid it at all costs. And I'm not saying because I came from the VC industry, I have no grudges about the industry. On the contrary, and I speak and moderate panels in the industry all the time. It's just that it's a whole different ballgame to have VCs, angel investors, and to prepare for an exit rather than being running a just a plain plain vanilla company. So you have to be ready for a different pressure. As for exit, so yeah, the obsession, especially in China, is about the IPO because the price-to-earning ratios are very high and the stock market is still very, very hot. So IPO route has always been something that people have been favoring either locally or overseas in Hong Kong and in the US. But as you were mentioning very rightly, trade sale, when you sell your company to somebody else, is the most likely outcome because not every startup is IPO material. Actually, less than 0.1% is. And you have to be ready, even if you don't have outside money, at the end of the day, when you start a company, to actually exit the company at some point, because otherwise you might just keep doing the same thing over and over. So having some kind of pressure is a good thing. And looking at trade sale from early on is also a good thing. It doesn't mean that you have to sell the company very quickly. It's just that you have to get ready to the idea that you might want to exit the company, sell it, do some strategic. Actually, you might want to acquire some company before you sell the company. And but looking at trade sale and M&As is a good thing to do as an entrepreneur, regardless of your size. It's very, very important. If you have a small team and your company is not very big, that doesn't mean that you cannot sell the company. On the contrary, I have actually clients, I can't mention names at the moment, but that are asking me, well, there is this company that just raised a 20 million round, and we think there is a good fit, and why not selling us to the company instead of selling to the usual suspects from our industry? And I tell them, yeah, it's a good idea because it's going to bring you, it's going to bring the team to a different kind of perspective than you would get if you sold the company to a large player. Because the terms are different, the fun is different, and it also brings freshness to what you're doing. Because being an entrepreneur is, in my opinion, is the most difficult thing that can be done. It's more difficult than being a VC, private equity firm. It's more difficult than being a banker or a lawyer. If you're an entrepreneur, you start from scratch. I have a lot of admiration and respect for the entrepreneurs, regardless of them failing or succeeding, because it is extremely difficult. You sacrifice a lot of things, but you should also leverage on what is in your power. And if you have a good team, even though you've not performed as well as you think you might, it's worth looking at, you know, what is the next step? Is my next step raising a VC round? Is my next step selling the company? And all are okay. All are okay. If you want to be $1 billion rich, of course, options are less. But if you're open to making less than that and just continue feeding your family and having fun and learning new things, I think all options should be on the table from very early on. And I think the most mature entrepreneurs, the entrepreneurs that succeed the most are not the smartest, but the people that are the most open, the most curious, that ask the most questions about this. How do you do things? How do you incorporate new companies into your ecosystem when they talk to a buyer? And also companies that might think about doing a merger with another company because it makes sense. So don't look at competition like the old-fashioned way that we want to kill them. Look at competition in an open manner and say, well, okay, they have a team of 15, we're a team of 10, we're slightly complementary, we're overlapping on it in different areas. Why don't we start talking to each other and be stronger? And yes, some people might lose in that discussion, but some people might gain. And at the end of the day, it's a good discussion to have, because what is worse, the worst thing for a company is to stand still. I mean, it's a truism. It's obvious, but when you stand still and you just look at your horizon, like you were looking at a year or 2 years ago, your company is dying of a slow death. You need to look at what are my options in terms of merger, in terms of buying companies, in terms of being acquired, in terms of talking to this guy and that guy and raising VC money. VC is just one of them. And I want to demystify the whole thing about VC. Very few people are going to raise VC money as well. Not every company that you encounter are going to raise. Actually, it's the contrary. Most of the companies are not going to raise. Of course, to raise money, you need to go through good accelerators like China Accelerator, 500, and others that are partners and are doing an excellent job at basically formatting you and helping you pivot if you need it and get ready for the next round of your life as an entrepreneur. But at the end of the day, getting VC money is, although it's very hot and there's a lot of money pouring into the market, it's a double standard. Most of the money is going to be injected in very few companies that are very hype. And the rest of the money, what remains of it, is going to be sparsely allocated to other companies. So if you're an entrepreneur, raising VC money is a privilege. You should look at, you know, other ways or different ways, or be open to different ways to grow and to make your company go to the next level, if I have to be on the generalities.
Okay, there's a lot of things that are super interesting, and but there's few of them I really want to go deep into them. And one of them, you talk about 0.01% of the companies that make it to an exit that should actually go IPO. You have this visibility of the world outside of China and in China getting involved in deals in both sides. Is China different? How different is China in terms of number of acquisitions? How is the acquisition market in China and how is it evolving?
Well, that's a tough one because you need to look at overseas, local and cross-border. I actually work on all of these markets, all of the above, if I may say. The local market is actually pretty hot for M&As, from startups to larger growth companies. So it's been growing steadily to a few hundred billion dollars in terms of sizes. So there's a lot of acquisitions and trade sale that are happening on the local market that are not showing up on the IPO radar. As far as cross-border is concerned, it's a little bit more tricky. First of all, because there is cross-cultural difficulties. Second, as of late, it's more difficult to do acquisitions outside of China for in the US, for example, for a Chinese company. And also Europe is closing some of the doors to some strategic acquisitions. So it's a little bit more tricky. However, if you look at the gaming industry, for example, or healthcare or some other industries that are vital for the Chinese economy, and I wouldn't say gaming is vital for the Chinese economy, but it's been vital for the internet companies that we know here, there's been a lot of transactions. A lot of transactions in the US, in the Nordics, in Europe and elsewhere. So if you're in the right industry, I think it's a relatively, I wouldn't say it's an easy path, but you can see the path towards selling your company to a Chinese buyer if you're in the right industry at the right timing and the right stage of development of your company. There's a lot of ifs.
So who are the Chinese buyers and how, I mean, will you say that there's a different profile for Chinese buyers? And what type of acquisitions are they looking for?
All right. So let's say China Accelerator is a tech accelerator. So we are going to stick to that for the moment. And your parent company is SOSV. And you look at a broader spectrum of industries. But who are the buyers? I mean, obviously, you have the Tencent, the Alibabas, and the Fosuns, and so on. So, and 360 as well, Cheetah Mobile, Xiaomi, and other companies. You also have private equity funds. Okay, that are looking at doing some LBOs, leverage buyouts outside of China. And you have the strategic buyers. The strategic buyer meaning companies that are just the leaders in their own markets, could be SOEs, state-owned companies, or privately held companies from China going overseas. And as I said, looking at acquisitions into healthcare, pharmaceutical, chemicals, steel, automotive, even aeronautics. And of course, software, silicon, semiconductors, and so on. So you've got a whole range of buyers. The people that we talk most about in the tech industries are, you know, Alibaba, Baidu, Tencent, and all these players. But it's actually a minority of the transactions for because, you know, China has a lot of needs. And, you know, as of not so long ago, they were deeply encouraged to buy anything that they could. However, because there was not enough focus, Chinese government has asked MOFCOM to raise the bar in terms of the requirements. MOFCOM, the Ministry of Commerce, raised the bar as of, you know, in terms of the size and scrutiny for what can be purchased overseas. Is it a strategic asset? There used to be a lot of assets purchased into the hospitality industry, real estate, and so on. This is not strategic enough. And there was a lot of money laundering and money going outside of China and going in the wrong pockets. So the Chinese government has stopped a lot of these investments. But still, for everything that is strategic enough, and I would say banking, as I was mentioning, silicon, semiconductors. You've heard about the spat between the US government and ZTE about the Iran business. So they banned ZTE from the US market, and they fined them a hefty fee, and they asked ZTE to change the way they operate, change their management, and they stopped the sourcing of ZTE into the US for their semiconductors. So that's a bit of an electroshock for ZTE and the whole semiconductor industry in China, because they realized that they were not ready. Not only ZTE, but the whole semiconductor industry in China realizes that there is a lot of components that they are not actually producing because they haven't done enough R&D. And so this is becoming a super strategic, and this has always been a very strategic industry, but even more now, because they realize how dependent they are from suppliers in Europe and especially in the US. So this is where you're going to see a lot of, you know, a lot of tensions into Chinese companies either trying to buy and purchase some companies in the West or funding their own R&D and their own companies and investing into GPs, general partners, into semiconductor funds focused so that they can develop the semiconductor even more, industry even more than they've been before. So there are transactions, I would say, but the current political environment is having an impact on some of these transactions because of the situation.
That's actually quite connected to the next question I wanted to ask, which is corporate venture capital funds, Chinese corporate venture capital funds have been among the most active globally investing. On the acquisition side, Google's buying a company every single day,
right?
Every single week. Are Chinese companies, when you mentioned that there's a lot of activity here, are Chinese companies also buying companies every single week?
Yes, but most of them are in China.
And those companies don't get reflected into these?
No, you see them in the local news. I think most of the time, actually, you see them. If you look under 36KR or local, you know, Tencent News or Caijin and so on, you can find these acquisitions. It's just that you need to track all of them, and it's pretty tedious, but there's a lot of acquisitions. It's just that for foreigners that don't follow the local news, because it's difficult, it's all in Chinese, and you need to have a team. Even for the Chinese, you need to have a team of people that are actually tracking it, but they are as active the local corporate funds are as active as Google is in the US. It's just that I think some of these transactions are more low profile. And what happens as well is you see a lot more of corporate funds in not only buying, but investing as a minority stake. So they not only do acquisition, they do minority and then they flip it, what we call flipping it. That means they list it on, they do the IPO as scheduled either in Shanghai, Shenzhen, Hong Kong or elsewhere. So I would say I find that local corporate VCs are more active than what Google and other companies are, because they have a larger range of investment possibilities. They do loans, they do a minority, they do majority, they do all sort of things just to make sure that the targets that they're looking after are not going to competition. And I'm one of the people that think that competition is much stronger. I mean, competition between players is much stronger and acute in China than what it is overseas, especially when you look at how diversified the local groups, especially internet, are here in China. I think they're basically firing from all cylinders. And now what I find interesting is the move into healthcare, because it's a segue to maybe some of the topics we're going to talk about later on. But most of the players that I've seen in the internet industry are moving into healthcare, either hardware, software, platforms, and so on, and into even into drug discovery, which is very surprising for internet companies. But as the healthcare industry is more and more related to artificial intelligence, and that there is the hope, although slightly overhyped, that AI is going to help better drug discovery and treatment. But I think there is this trend that internet companies are moving into healthcare, into food tech as well. May have seen this, and from last year into automotive and autonomous vehicles, whatever vehicle there is flying or going into the road. So AI is a big driver of whatever is being done at the moment. And healthcare, I'm very happy that is also moving into healthcare, because this is useful.
Yeah. I want to go back to the topic of the acquisitions, and more specifically about these early exits. I mean, an early exit is an exit event that happens faster than what most entrepreneurs that are thinking into a 5-10 years potential, right? Listing or
exactly.
or pre-acquisition. And it comes early. And sometimes, obviously, the price might also be lower than the expectation. But in some cases, that early exit doesn't mean that the founders get less return for their work, because some of these mega rounds, they have terms that are, I mean, even if the funding that the company receives is really good, the terms that come associated with these rounds can be very, very negative for entrepreneurs. Based on this access to deals in outside of China and in China.
Yes.
About these early exits, do you see early exits also being something good for founders in China?
Absolutely. I see less early exits in the West than actually in China, because the speed of the business in China is much faster, is much stronger here in China. So if you don't make an acquisition as a buyer, then the company might actually raise at an outrageous valuation, and you might end up paying double and triple just 6 months from now. So let's put ourselves in the shoes of the entrepreneur. Why is an early exit a good thing, or why is it not a bad thing? First, you mentioned, Oscar, about the different terms and the different class of shares that you might be subscribing to if you are a VC into a company, and it's difficult if you're an entrepreneur to actually understand who is favored into your capitalization table, who is going the preference, especially when there is an exit, and who gets the money and who doesn't get it. So it's very complicated. So to avoid that conundrum and that difficulty into raising different rounds at different terms and so on, looking at an early exit makes a lot of sense. But it makes all the more sense, especially for companies that are not able to raise a VC round. And what I encourage, and I think that should be the goal of that podcast, is to encourage companies and founders to think about themselves and think about, is the company that I run fit to raise a VC round, and why? And I think that brings us to the next topic. What companies are actually qualified to raise a VC round? You need traction, you need KPIs, you need momentum, you need speed. I mean, there's a lot of things that are very difficult to understand for a company founder when he's beginning his adventure. But actually, the requirements are fairly high. And what a company founder most of the time does not understand, he or she, is that there are tons of companies that are like his or her company. So there is competition out there. And you might have good KPIs. It's just that a VC most of the time has seen 10, 20, or 100 BPs, business plan, that are look alike. And he or she will go to the company that fits more criteria for their investment committee, which you're not aware. Sometimes you're not aware of what the investment committee of the fund wants, or what they prefer, or it might be a very subjective decision process. So a lot of company founders should reflect on themselves and think maybe it would be a better thought out process to look at an exit through a trade sale. And Benjamin Joff, one of your partners at SOSV, was mentioning it into one of his latest trainings, is you need to think about your trade sale early and start connecting with the future buyers, with the teams that are going to acquire you, or the teams that you want to be acquiring, so that you create value for your company, then you can sell yourself better tomorrow. Regardless, I think that process should be thought of very early, and you should reflect as an entrepreneur on whether or not you really are material for VC money. Besides, even if you are material for VC money, you might not, in your personality, be fit to bring outside people in your company and the level of scrutiny that is required. And again, don't fall for the hype. I mean, you as an entrepreneur, you might be in an incubator, part of the startup ecosystem. And when you read the news on TechCrunch and others, you're basically becoming jealous of your fellow entrepreneurs that are raising funds. And this is the worst thing to do. It's like looking at Facebook and looking at all these happy people, and you feel very unhappy and sad and miserable yourself. I'm not saying this is the case for you, Oscar, obviously, but it is a known phenomenon that when you read these fundraising news, you might think, okay, why have I not done it? And it's maybe not a bad thing. It's just that you need to think, maybe my company is not fit for it. And I want to leave on a positive note that all the options should be on the table, but you need to reflect on yourself and say, well, maybe that project that I'm running now is not fit. Maybe tomorrow it will be more fit. And a lot of ideas that I see from entrepreneurs are not really novel ideas. They're not really solving that very itchy problem. It's just a very good add-on. It's a good to have, but not something that people will die for. So as an entrepreneur, you always have a lot of ideas, but maybe the idea you're currently running is just not good enough to be part of the VC story, but maybe tomorrow. So don't be sad about it. Go with, do what you're supposed to be doing. Do it with passion. Do your trade sale or your IPO if you can do your IPO, but think about the next step. And think also, am I working on something that is so useful for people that, you know, there's going to be word of mouth, and there's going to be so much momentum around the idea. Let me give you a very precise example. One of my very early clients was App Annie. App Annie, you know, the mobile analytics, a very, very successful company. But back then they were very, very small when they started, obviously. You know, every company starts somewhere. And they were an offshoot of a software company, and they decided to do some analytics because the Apple App Store was a mess. The analytics from the App Store was a mess, and developers wanted to have something more structured. They wanted to have visibility, and some other people wanted to see, you know, what companies were doing well into downloads and so on. And so they created a set of, you know, tools for the developers to be using and for outside people, and it became viral. So it became so viral that people were actually contacting them without, out of the blue, just asking, can you give me access or can I invest in your company and so on. I mean, it wasn't that far, but it was pretty much like this. So investors had heard or even used the company without even knowing that they were raising funds. And when that happens, that means you're solving a problem. So think about yourself as, would other people just be using organically my tool without me needing to do any marketing? If that's the case, that's a good sign that you will be very successful and that VCs will knock at your door. If you need to do a lot of protracted marketing and pay a lot of people and pay a lot of KOLs to do your advertising and to make yourself popular, that means you're virally, organically, you're not able to do it. So you need to think, okay, maybe that's a sign that the company is solving a small problem, but is not going to be that popular as far as investors are concerned. So just be realistic and honest about it. And maybe your next idea will be your billion-dollar company, which I wish for any entrepreneur. But maybe the current idea is going to just help you put aside a few hundred Ks or a million or two to fund the next bigger idea. Just be honest about it and keep doing what you're doing.
So that's actually a really good number that you were sharing. I mean, what is the typical profile of an early acquisition in China? I mean, what are the typical criteria? What are the reasons that corporate might explore an early acquisition in a company? And what is the volume? What is the size of those transactions?
Okay, so there are different profiles of companies that could be purely Chinese founders in China, and that could be foreign founders in China. Two different profiles. Let me start by the second one. So a foreign founder, usually you see agencies or SaaS companies. What I mean by an agency is somebody that is providing web services, mobile services, that has a good software and that is gaining market share. So let's say a corporate buyer will always look at an acquisition when it's itching, when that company, that very small company, is taking market share out of them. And it's going to be so annoying that they would start talking to them and tell them, you know, we should start talking about an acquisition. We should start talking about, you know, being partners. And this is because that small, very nimble company has been able to snatch market share out of the big player. Another scenario would be that you're providing something that did not exist. And so that could be software for, I'm talking about healthcare because I've worked in the healthcare industry for clients. And it's an area which I think is developing not only very fast, but where the need for digitalization is very strong. So if you can digitalize and reduce the friction in that industry for patients or for, let's say, medical professionals to understand what treatment is better or to reach to patients and so on. So if you solve something very specific, that did not exist before and that is going to bring an edge to the big corporate player, then this is when the discussion about an acquisition is going to make sense.
So how do you make the decision when you're solving a problem like this? I mean, this seems to be some of the problems that you're mentioning, they seem to be actually big problems where you could potentially build big companies. Why does it make sense to consider an early acquisition at that stage? And what would be the from the entrepreneur's side, running a business in China, what could be the reason for them to say, yeah, we should maybe consider that road instead of
understood
going the VC route?
Understood. Two reasons. First, speed. Second, complexity. Speed, why? You have a position that is currently favorable. You're taking market share from someone and it's hurting. Fortunately, in China, things are going really, really fast. Other players might actually copy or be inspired by what you're doing. By the way, that does not only happen in China, that happens everywhere. And the difference is that in China, these companies can get funded overnight. So you have a sort of semi-dominant position about a specific product on day one, day three or four, that might actually change. We're talking about months, we're talking about weeks. So if you are in that position, don't think that it's going to last forever, especially in China. So when a corporate player is approaching you and telling you, we might look at your company and acquire it, take it very seriously, because you might not be material for VC funding. And so somebody else might be, and they might overpower you. Or just Alibaba or Tencent might think, okay, I'm going to pour money into that industry and going to basically overpower you just overnight. So, and that happens for local companies all the time. So speed is something that you should consider. If you're in a position where you have a bit of a bargaining advantage, take it and don't waste time. Complexity. Also, when we were talking about when it comes for an entrepreneur to sell the company. So if you sell your company to a corporate player, they will obviously require you they will ask from you a lot of different KPIs, a lot of different milestones to be reached. So if you're able to reach these milestones comfortably, then I think you're basically in a good position to be acquired and to still be interested into doing what you're doing. If it's too complex, because you're asking me, when do you make the decision, yes or no? If it's too complex, because a lot of corporate players have a protracted process. The process is complicated and they put a lot of hurdles into you so that you don't succeed that well, so that the acquisition price is not as good as you might think it is. So if they say, I'm going to acquire you for 10 million, first I give you 1 million and then the other 9 are going to be milestones for the next 5 years. And I'm going to put, let's say, a corporate overhead into your P&L, a profit and loss statement, so that you never achieve actually your profitability goals. So when you think you can achieve these goals, maybe go for it and don't expect. I mean, something very important that I've learned along the years, if somebody from a big company is telling you that you're going to get 10, I'll probably expect you're going to have 5 and be happy with it, run with it. Because reaching the 10 is extremely difficult and challenging, and they will make everything in their power so that by the time you're able to reach 10, you would have left the company for a long time. You would have been so disgusted by the corporate processes within the corporate buyer because you've done that for 1, 2, or 3 years that you said, well, I'm throwing the towel, I'm leaving, and so long for my options to get the remaining shares of the company sold. So just look at the process realistically. Don't look at the top line number, look at what you can get in your pocket immediately, what you can get in your pocket in 6 months, a year and a half. I mean, in the life of an entrepreneur, a year and a half, 2 years is extremely long, especially in the Chinese market. Because at the end of the day, if you sell a company in China, it's still a very fast-paced market, regardless of whom you're selling your company to. So look at the next 2 or 3 years. And if realistically, you're going to get 50% of your objectives, and if that's okay, I would say go for it. I'm not saying to not be ambitious, but I'm saying be realistic about it. So on one hand, be careful about speed. If you're going to be overpowered, look at being acquired by corporate buyers. If that corporate buyer offer is reasonable enough, and this is why I encourage you, and this is coming to the segue of using advisors like myself or other people to tell you what is realistic to accept and not to accept. One of the loopholes that entrepreneurs fall into is valuation. This is very common. They think about themselves very highly, which is good because they are very ambitious, a lot of type A personalities. So they think their company is worth 10 million, which is, let's say, 10 times revenue, and they are not even near profitability. So in the West, when you look at these companies, either they are super strategic and have such a deep tech that they are going to command 10 or 20 times revenue, or even just an evaluation that is completely arbitrary based on the last round, or you're going to be assessed, which is 90% of the cases, based on your profitability. So if you're neither able to be assessed on profitability or assessed based on the amazing tech that you're providing to the market, meaning that you're just an average startup, and that means there's going to be a painful discussion about your valuation. And this is why I encourage everybody, every entrepreneur that is looking at being acquired or even acquiring another company to be advised, to seek help in, what is realistic? What are the different other transactions that happened? What I find in entrepreneurs is also they look at transactions that happened 6 or 9 months ago when the market was very different. And they say, oh, they were worth 100 million, so I must be worth 50. Yeah, but 9 months ago, in another country, things were different. Now it's China, and now it's this and that and that. And by the way, Alibaba and Tencent are moving into your industry. Are you still worth 100 million? So they need to look at various things that are comparables, and they need to look at things that are close enough to their industry and their timeline so that the comparison is fair. And which is why I advise them to seek advice either from myself or other people. So valuation is a big topic, and ego should not get in the way. So which is why I think discussions on these topics are very valuable, because it's an eye opener for a lot of people to, you know, am I VC material? Can I sell the company at 10 or 20? Why and why not? And then when the explanation phase has gone through, then they understand better where they sit into the spectrum of startups and where they should sell or whether they should continue or look at the trade sale process more heavily and spend more time. And because time allocation is very important.
Thank you much, Bruno. Bruno represents both buyers that are looking for strategic targeting China or overseas, as well as founders or startups that have been approached or are looking to sell their company. Yeah. In case anybody wants to reach out to you, Bruno, how they can contact you?
They can contact me different ways. WeChat is one way. So my WeChat is BRU SHANGHAI, Bru Shanghai, or by email with my surname, BENSAID at fastmail.fm. I'd be happy to talk to anyone that needs advice. I am advisor to a lot of startups, even though I don't always work with them, but I'm happy to have a discussion. I'm also an investor in a number of startups, and I'm happy also to review business plans if people are interested, because I'm part of also an angel group called AngelVest, which is a partner of China Accelerator. So any discussion is fine. I'm very open, and I'm in China every month or so. So and I can do remote or face-to-face discussions.
Thank you much, Bruno, for today and sharing insights for entrepreneurs or companies that are looking into China, both as a way to develop their business or grow their startup here.
Thank you very much, Oscar.
Hey everyone, I just want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, China Accelerator. They are an accelerator based in Shanghai, bringing international ideas into China and Chinese ideas international. They're number one in what they do. They're a 3-month program, and they help build your idea and make it amazingly successful. You can find out more at www.chinaaccelerator.com. People Squared is the original co-working space in China. It's your home for startups, no matter what you're working on. Small team or large, it has all the resources, the environment, the culture, everything that you need to take your idea and make it successful. Founded by Bob Zheng, an entrepreneur himself who really understands what startups need, it's a great place to bring your team and find success. You can find out more at people-squared.com.